Well, on Sunday evenings, we're going through Mark's Gospel. And last time we looked at chapter 8 and verses 22 to 33, we reached a turning point. For eight chapters, the message has been that Jesus is the Christ. He's the King. He's the King to end all kings. And by chapter 8, the disciples get it. There's Peter's confession. He asked them, but who do you say that I am? Peter answered, you are the Christ. They get it. But if they see that he's the Christ, they don't yet see clearly. They're like our blind man we've just been reading about, who's healed in two stages. The disciples, by chapter 8, they're no longer blind, but neither do they see clearly. Remember the words of our blind man? I see men... But they look like trees walking. That's the disciples. They recognize that Jesus is the Christ, but they don't really get why he's come. And so when Jesus begins to explain why, that he's coming to put things right, to save the world, to establish his kingdom, but he's coming to do it in a way that has crossed nobody's mind, that he's come to suffer and to die. His language in verse 31 is very strong, isn't it? The Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed. That word must, it's a divine necessity. I must be killed. I must suffer and die. When Peter hears that, he says, Lord, you got it all wrong. So they see that Jesus is the Christ, but they've yet to understand why the Christ has come and what the Christ has come to do. Just like our blind man who's healed in two stages, by chapter 8, they're at stage 1. They see he's the Christ, but they don't see clearly. And so for the next 8 chapters, Jesus will fully restore their sight. But if Jesus' words that he's the Christ and the Christ must suffer, if those words are shocking, what Jesus says next is no less shocking. Look at verse 34. And he called to him the crowd with his disciples and said to them, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Whatever happened to gentle Jesus, meek and mild? If the king is going to a cross, says Jesus, so are the disciples. If he has come to suffer and die, they too must suffer and die. What's true of the king, says Jesus, is true for his followers also. And it's shocking stuff. Following Jesus really is all or nothing. So please have chapter 8 and verses 34 and 38 open in front of you. And we have 3 points this evening. Point number 1 is all or nothing. What is authentic Christianity? Jesus puts it like this. It makes it very plain. Doesn't hide it. He called to him the crowd with his disciples. He wants everyone to hear this. And he said to them, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Now, what does Jesus mean? Well, says Jesus, if you would be my disciple, you must deny self. Now, it's not self-denial. It's not hair shirts and bachelor priests and giving up chocolate for Lent. It's the denial of self. So you knock on my door. I open the door. I say, oh, it's you. Go away. You're not wanted. What have I done to you? Well, I've denied you access. And every day of a believer's life, self comes knocking. Let me in. What about me? What about my interests, my concerns, my image, my wants? What about putting me first for a change? And says, Jesus, if you're my disciple, every day I am to deny self. It was you. Go away. You're not wanted. See what Jesus is saying? He says, you are to refuse to make yourself the center of your thoughts, your plans, your life. Somebody else now rules. Self has been deposed. Christ now reigns. So it's not Jesus first and me second. It's not Jesus first and me fourth, fifth, tenth, a hundredth. Self is denied. Go away. Because anything less is giving in to self. And if I'm giving in to self, I won't be following Jesus, will I? It's all or nothing. I am to deny self, says Jesus. At his conversion, the Apostle Paul put it like this. He said, Lord, what do you want me to do? As a mature believer, the same Paul puts it like this. He says, for me to live is Christ. But Jesus puts it even more emphatically. Verse 34, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross. The disciple is not above his master. As Jesus took up his cross, so all who follow him must take up their cross. Now, what does Jesus mean? Well, what did it mean for those who were gathered round Jesus that day? It meant for them exactly what Jesus says. If anyone would come after me, let him deny self and take up his cross. He's saying to them, if you follow me, don't be surprised if they nail you to a cross. Don't be surprised if they treat you exactly as they treat me. And it's shocking stuff, isn't it? Followers of Jesus must expect to die for him. And so Jesus, if you have to die for me, then do it. Because following me is more important than your life. Following me is more important than life itself. It's all or nothing. And of course, of those disciples, and the 12 will gather around, let's put Judas on one side of the others, none of them died in their beds. They suffered, were rejected, they were put to death. And not just that Jesus is in a circle, but Christians in their millions. For two centuries in the Roman Empire, the official policy, what you do with the Christians, you put the Christians to death. When there was any tragedy or problem or difficulty, the cry would go up, Christians to the lions. Because of any tragedy, it must be because our gods are angry. Our gods are angry because so many people are becoming Christians. How do we placate our gods? We throw the Christians to the lions. We put them to death. If ever you want to buff up your orthodoxy and show you're a good Roman, you're living in the provinces, well then, let's put to death those who say that Jesus is Lord rather than Caesar is Lord. But dying is not just in the past, is it? It still goes on. Last Sunday morning, we were thinking about in China during the communist revolution when they took over in 1949. In one province, Christians, when they came to them, they crucified them. They nailed them to the walls of their churches. And what of today? What of North Korea and Somalia and Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Iran, the Yemen, Nigeria? The list goes on. Where men, women, boys and girls will die and die today, die in 2014 and die in their thousands for being followers of Jesus Christ. So we've got to be careful we don't suddenly jump in and spiritualize everything. For followers of Jesus, it means exactly what it says. For some, it will mean death. But you will love me more than you love your life, says Jesus. It's all or nothing. What about us? How am I to take up my cross? Well, I don't just deny self. I am to die to self. What's a cross for? It's for putting people to death. So says Jesus, put self to death. Lose your life. Forfeit control. Take that one-way journey to a place of execution. Because the claims of Christ upon you are total. Nothing less than self on the cross and Christ on the throne. It's all for Jesus. If you come to him, he is now the center of everything. I eat, drink, sleep, Christ. And if that means putting myself out, if that means rejection, humiliation, suffering, shame, if that means a cross, then so be it. Because Christ is more important than all those things. And those things are to be so many nothings compared to him. It's all or nothing. What do I get in return? Well, I get Jesus. Verse 34, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. If I followed someone, do you follow a team? Do you follow someone on Twitter? Do you follow Emmerdale? I think, well, I wouldn't miss an episode. Christians follow Jesus. In the home where the mask is off, follow me. At work, at college, where others are watching, follow me. In the community of the church, follow me. In my solitude, when no one is watching, follow me. And whatever it costs, and wherever it leads, says Jesus, follow me, follow me. Follow me until my thoughts become your thoughts, my words become your words, my life becomes your life. Until, in the words of Paul, for me to live is Christ. It really is all or nothing. So point number two. Isn't this all a bit harsh? All or nothing. Are we saying that this is authentic Christianity? Is this the real thing? Isn't there sort of something in between? Can't I follow Jesus as long as he sort of keeps me out of trouble, as long as he doesn't spoil things? Look at verse 35. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. See what Jesus is saying? He said, if you don't see me as that important, if you would spare yourself the trouble, or maybe you're just too scared to follow me because of what it might cost, then says Jesus, in the end, you'll lose everything. Okay, but can't I follow Jesus as long as I sort of can keep one hand on things, keep the things that really matter to me? Well, look at verse 36. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his life? If you don't see Jesus as the be-all and end-all, because actually you have got your hand on something, you are actually sort of looking past him to see what else is going on and other things I might have. If at the end of the day things are more important to you, the world around you is more important to you than the king, if maybe all this just sounds just too extreme, too fanatical, it's unreal, then again, says Jesus, you will lose everything. Man comes to sell you a savings policy. But you have a choice. He offers this. There are two policies. The first comes with a sort of glossy brochure. There are celebrity endorsements, there are free shopping vouchers, and actually there's a free luxury holiday, and there are no fees. Think, oh boy, look at this, this is fantastic, I'm going to invest everything into this. But what's the question you've forgotten to ask? What sort of return do I get? We better ask the question. You say, okay, fine. But what sort of return do I get? And the man looks at you very cheerfully and he says, oh, you get absolutely nothing. In fact, you lose everything. Your life, your soul, your all. For whoever would save his life will lose it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his life. Well, I better find out what that other policy is. And I look at it, there's no glossy brochure this time. And there are no celebrity endorsements, and there are certainly no freebies, not the sort that the other was offering. And yes, there's the cost. And actually, when I look at it, this one seems to be demanding blood. So I think, oh, well, I'm not going to go for that one. Well, maybe I'll make a very small investment in this one. But again, what's the question I need to ask? What sort of return do I get? And this time the man looks at you solemnly in the eye and he says, you get everything. With this policy, you receive eternal life. Whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. So which policy would you invest in? The one that looks so grand and glossy, but in the end you lose everything? Or the one where you gain everything in the end? Which one would you invest in? Which one are you investing in? Says Jesus, no small print. Says, know what you're getting into. Whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his life? See what Jesus is saying? He's saying, why lose everything? If I live for me, I refuse to deny self. It's all about me. Me first. This Jesus. No chance. You're asking too much. Then says Jesus, I lose everything. And the loss is irreplaceable. It's a loss nothing can compensate, verse 37. For what can a man give in return for his life? To refuse to deny self, to take up my cross and follow Jesus because it looks too costly, says Jesus, is ultimately to lose everything. Irreplaceable, irreversible, irredeemable. Here are Moses. He was once faced with the same choice. The writer of the Hebrews talks about it. This is what he says. Hebrews 11. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. So Moses, he gave up the life of a millionaire. Remember, Egypt is the superpower. Pharaoh reigns over Egypt. But he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He gave up the life of a millionaire and he gave it up for a life of trouble, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. With the whole world at his feet, he gave it away for a cross. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt. Now, why did he do it? Was Moses a fool? Should he have stuck with Pharaoh? Should he have said, ah, I'm an adopted son, but actually, if I play my cards right, I could be the Pharaoh. I could be the next Pharaoh. I could rule over all of this. It could all be mine. Should he have stuck with Pharaoh? Well, where's Pharaoh now? He's in that other place. What are the treasures of Egypt now? Where are they? Well, somewhere in the British Museum. But they're no longer Pharaoh's. What about those pleasures? Moses could have had a playboy lifestyle, couldn't he? But those pleasures were going to have to come to an end someday. He couldn't enjoy them forever. A few fleeting years, enjoying some passing pleasures, pleasures that would leave you defiled and at a loss. And then what? So Moses gave up that. But what did he give it up for? He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. What reward? eternal life. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. And you look in a psalm like Psalm 16, where the man is coming to the end of his life. He's a believer, and he's looking to what he's got to look forward to. What have he got to look forward to? He says, in your presence there is fullness of joy, and at your right hand are pleasures, the pleasures of God, pleasures forevermore. You see, Moses did his sums. He wasn't stupid. He wasn't a fool. He worked it out. He did the arithmetic. For what does it profit a man if he gained the whole world? What if I have this Egypt? What if I am the king and ruling over it all? One day it's going to slip through my hands and I will lose everything. What does it profit a man if he gained the whole world and forfeit his life? And he thought, why lose everything? Think of Jim Elliot, multi-talented. He could have done anything, Jim Elliot. The brilliant man. But he apparently gave it all up for Christ, to take the gospel to the Orca Indians and to be martyred. But what did he say? He is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Look at verse 38. For whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with his holy angels. Jesus going to a cross, but beyond the cross. He'll rise from the dead. He'll ascend to heaven. He'll be crowned King of Kings, Lord of Lords. So all who follow him, they're going to find themselves out of step with this world. This world is a sinful and an adulterous generation. They'll find themselves out of step with this world. And therefore, if they're out of step with this world, they can expect to be treated as he was treated. But if they share his reproach, unashamed to belong to Jesus, then they will share his glory. The cross leads to the crown. Blessed is Jesus to be ashamed of me now. To say that Jesus, this the true king, he asked too much. He's going to spoil my life. He's going to get in the way. He's going to get in the way of what I want, and therefore to back away. Well, you might live till you're 80. You might do very well for yourself. You won't get the whole world, but you might do well for yourself. And you might have a beautiful death. It was just the way you wanted. But then what? You lose everything. And you're ushered into the presence of God unprepared. And because you've made your home with this sinful and adulterous generation, there's no way you can prove your innocence. And he will cast you into hell. Having been ashamed of him, says Jesus, I will be ashamed of you. Depart from me. And you'll be banished into the outer darkness. For whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him the Son of Man will be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with his holy angels. My friend, do you think Jesus is serious? Now we can read this, can't we? And we say, oh, fair enough. Do you think he's actually serious? Do you think he really means this? I mean, we'll be looking at a handsome clock. And it's very reasonably priced. So we asked, is it authentic? Is it the real thing? And we were told, no, it's a reproduction. It's much cheaper. And it looks almost like the real thing. But it's not the real thing. So my friend, if you're looking for sort of a less costly Christianity, a sort of Christianity light, you know, for those who aren't quite so keen, a Christ who lets you keep a hand on what you want, and lets you do the things the way that you like them to be. Well, if you find it, remember, it's not the real thing. Says Jesus, it's all or nothing. Which brings us to our final point. Is Jesus' demand really so harsh? Verse 34 again. Called up to him the crowd with his disciples, he said to them, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. So Jesus, if you want me, you've got to die to self. How bad is that really? Do you like yourself? What if everyone in the world was you? Okay, it's a thought for a moment, isn't it? You know, you turn around, everyone's me. Everyone's you. What sort of world would it be? If everyone was you, would you like to live in a world where everyone is you? It's not just that everyone's music would be too loud, but everyone, if they were you, would be doing what they want, wouldn't they? Everyone would be saying, me first. So think of the competition. Think of the rivalries. Think of the jealousies. And everyone's chasing the same dream because they're chasing your dream. And everyone feels they deserve better. And all those little lies told to make you look good. But of course, everyone's telling those little lies to make themselves look good because everyone's you. So you couldn't trust anybody. Yeah, I can't trust myself because I know what I'm really like. Louis Armstrong sang, "What a Wonderful World." But if everyone was me, I think I'd like to get off. Unless, of course, you think you are wonderful, which might make things even worse. Do you like yourself? Be honest, do you really like yourself? When you get stressed because your plans don't work out, when you get angry because things just aren't the way you like it, and there's always someone who's going around and spoiling things, isn't there? There's always somebody, there's always some idiot somewhere who gets in the way and spoils things, and you... And you try to make yourself the center of the universe, but then, big shock, you find out the universe doesn't revolve around you. So what do? You go around being grumpy all day. But why are we grumpy? It's because the universe doesn't revolve around me. Things aren't the way I like them to be. So I go around with a big look on my face and I'm a grump. And sometimes when things don't work out my way, I just can't cope. Do you like yourself? When you feel small and fears are big, when you feel vulnerable and insecure, and I need people to tell me that they love me, but then that thought comes into my head, but what if they don't really love me? So of course I start doing things to make people like me, because I want to be loved, I want to be liked, and then I find, well, I'm being then controlled by people's expectations, because I want them to like me, so I'm doing what I think that they will like, but it's not really me who's doing it. And far from feeling free, I feel I'm being controlled. Do you like yourself? Do you like yourself when you feel alone and lonely and you feel empty and sad and you're thirsty and you've got a big hole inside you and you don't know what to fill it with and everything around you is boring and I don't want to know about that, but I want something, but I can't find what that something is. And I aim to be happy and most of the time I'm not happy. Do you like yourself? Do you like yourself when you feel rubbish inside? Because deep down inside you know you are rubbish. What if you find out what I'm really like and reject me? And what about the things I've done that I regret and I have remorse and I've got that personal history? And always that sense of trying to prove myself, to prove that I'm witty and wise and wonderful and clever and good at this and expert at that. Because deep down inside, I know I'm not those things. And actually, if you got to know me, you'd really be disappointed in me. Do you like yourself? When I feel life is a waste of time. 10 years ago, Robin Cook died. He was only 59. He aimed high. Not quite the whole world, but he aimed high. He became Foreign Secretary. And he said, not bad for the son of a chemistry teacher. But in no time at all, it was all over. Dead at 59. What was all that about? What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeit his life? Be honest. Do you like yourself? Living for self is miserable. All the smallness and the pettiness and the rivalries and the anger and the tears and the fears and the insecurities and the desperate need for love and approval. Because I want to be loved. And the emptiness and the feeling that I'm rubbish because actually deep down inside I know I am rubbish. And then to live for who knows what, and at the end of it then to die. I think, well, what was all that about? What was the point of that? And before the week's out, I'll be yesterday's news. It seems that dying to self is a sweet release. Why don't Buddhist monks sing? Why do they have no tradition of music? It's because they have nothing to sing about. They say reality is a non-self. That to be free, you must realize that self doesn't exist. So all you can do is sit in silence. But, says Jesus, reality is death to self and following him. So I come out of myself and into Christ. When I die to self, what I find is not nothingness, and I sit in silence. When I die to self, I find Jesus Christ. And that's why Christians sing. Because they found him. The one who is altogether lovely. The King himself. He is what I gain. And the King who loved me. Loved me so much that he went to a cross. The Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected and be killed. He goes to a cross where the sins of all who come to him are put to his account, so that when God comes to punish the guilty, Jesus takes the blame. You see, Christians have faced up to the fact that they are rubbish. It's no good trying to prove I'm somebody special. That I'm somehow better than I really am. Sooner or later I'm going to be found out. They face up to the fact that they are rubbish. That there is no good in them. That they are sinners. But this is the wonderful thing. It is Jesus who loves sinners. And loves them enough to come from the glory to die on the cross to save them from their sins and to change them. And so it's to Jesus that they come. They come out of themselves and into Christ. They surrender their lives to him. And when they do, they find that his love is better than life itself. So I'd rather die enjoying his love than to live on without it. And they find that he is the one who accepts me just as I am, unconditionally, and loves me for who I am, unconditionally. And they find in Christ all they ever wanted. And the taking up my cross, dying to self, is actually the birth pangs to real and unending joy. And that's why Christians sing. I've been forgiven. I've been changed. My life is now filled with Christ. And therefore it's a life that's full of light and joy. And at last this Jesus, he will bring me to a heaven that is filled with music. Dying to self is not coming into nothingness. It's coming to Jesus Christ. And you know, the funny thing is, it's when I die to self that I find myself. Because it's Jesus who makes me alive. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. My friend, as we close, are you stuck in yourself? If you're locked in, you're unable to rewrite your past. You're unable to to rewrite your DNA. You can't change your situation. And you know you're rubbish. There are those sins and the guilt, and you can't change things and you can't erase things. And you want things to change. You think so often something's got to change, but nothing ever changes. Because you don't change. You're still the same. You can't get out of yourself. And you can change the environment and change the scenery, but you can't change yourself. You're locked in. And it's a miserable life. And time's running out. Then come to Jesus Christ. Come just as you are. Lord, you went to a cross and you died to save condemned sinners. Well, that's who I am. So, Lord, save me. Lose your life to Jesus and you will save your life. The sweet release of dying to self.